brilliant presentation. I see there's a few questions from the audience, so let me start. What is your approach to acute hyperkalemia? Any novel approaches?
For acute hyperkalemia, you almost have to go back to what's the reason. If the patient's hyper, if the reason of hyperkalemia is a rhabdomyolysis, and you have to look at the situation. If it's a compartment syndrome, not get relieved, and that's a telltale sign writing on the wall is you need to do dialysis, because you just never know. The potassium could come out, shift from the cells very fast. On the other hand, if the patient's having some sort of a big meal, have CKD issues, and you look at the cardiovascular situation, there's no major ECG change, the patient's still making urine, then you just need to be very careful. Our protocol at Mayo is they do the usual thing, beta agonist, insulin, to create an acute shift, and then you can try diuretics. So again, it depending on the cause and the severity.
Yeah, so there's a couple questions here from KXLate. Do you still use it? Do you not recommend it?
that's a very good question. So KXLate, just like I said, there's not even single one study, doesn't matter animal or human, demonstrating that KXLate increases GI potassium excretion. But if you're looking at some retrospective study, there's some serum potassium effects with the KXLate. But if there's no demonstration of a GI potassium loss, there could be many other reasons why potassium is lost. It could be, you know, diuretic, it could be shift. And anyway, even the human studies data are not very strong that KXLate is helpful. So on the other hand, there has been case report of a patient that had developed a gut necrosis because of the KXLate binds, you know, it comes with sorbitol, creates stress on the gut mucosa. So from my standpoint, I don't use it that much, and I don't hang in on the KXLate, hoping the KXLate would help me, but that's our practice, yeah.
So there's another question on patiromer. Has it shown to reduce mortality in patients with hyperkalemia taking ACE or ARBs?
Oh, you mean whether the mortality... This has not been studied. However, for the patients who are withdrawn, the ACE-ARB, they are clearly dying much faster. That population of patients, CKD with diabetes and cardiac disease, heart failure. So if we could continue the ACE-ARB, you can argue that could be life-saving. Do we have any evidence in that patient population continue ACE-ARB helps in terms of decreasing mortality? We do have very solid evidence. But, you know, pateromia per se with mortality, I don't know if we have studied that. I don't think we've studied that yet.
So there's a couple more. I just had one question regarding sodium bicarbonate. We always, you know, are scared because our patients are already fluid overload.
Yes.
They have edema. However, these studies have not shown that, you know, you give bicarbonate, sodium bicarbonate, and the patients actually do not have gain weight.
Yeah.
So the main question here remains why. And, you know, we think maybe the chloride, you know, is the problem and not the sodium, and the chloride is basically the bad guy. What are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, that's a very good question and very good point. Sodium chloride behave very different from sodium bicarbonate and also different from balanced fluids. That has been demonstrated in multiple studies. And if you give a sodium chloride, 0.9% of sodium, because people are saying this is a normal saline. That's really not normal at all. First of all, the pH of the sodium chloride is 5.3. So it's a very acidic. The reason of acidic is by the strong ion difference, which is zero. So when high chloride components get into the kidney through the tubules, they activate the JG junction cells, causing glomerular tubular feedback. And once this feedback is activated, then the kidney causes an efferent vasoconstriction. Actually, the kidney will have trouble unloading salt and unloading chloride. Why is that? Because first, the kidney, this is triggered by high chloride. So you don't have that component when you coupled sodium with bicarbonate. I think that played at least one of the role.
Thank you. All right, so a couple of more questions from the audience. Any thoughts regarding calcium phosphorus dysregulation and the incidence of vascular calcification?
Yes. There's quite a bit of information. I would refer you to the review. We have added a new study results in that review. You could dig yourself into the paper. But again, you know, the issue is the patients are really higher risk of endothelial dysfunction in the setting of a CKD. So they are very sensitive to calcium phosphorus products, but the crystallization is related to multiple factors. pH is one factor. If it's alkalemic, you can crystallize the vessel very quickly. Another issue is the magnesium. And for many reasons, even dialysis patients develop hypomagnesemia. But we knew very well at the physiological level, magnesium is an antagonism of calcium. So just by raising the magnesium to a very nice range, you could prevent the ongoing vascular calcification. I'm just overly simplifying this this issue, but there's quite a bit of promising information just by understanding the interactions that could help us minimize the fluctuation of the pH, minimize the product level, minimize or prevent the low serum magnesium, and these would all be helpful. And the phosphate binders, again, we have new studies related to different phosphate binders.
Thank you. So the last question from the audience, or at least the one that I have here, it's what are your thoughts on high potassium intake associated with better outcomes in CKD patients?
High potassium intake associated with
Better outcomes.
Yes. So Alicia Megloff is one of my friends who did a number of studies. She's a wonderful researcher looking at the potassium, sodium, potassium balance because apparently, you know, we are hunter-gatherer for millions of years. We always live in the very low salt, very high potassium environment. Actually, our cells are very happy with high potassium and functions better in the high, you know, abundant potassium situation, but limited salt. And now our diet is completely opposite. We intake lots of sodium, saturated the cell with sodium, but for a variety of reasons, actually, we have less potassium in general population. And also, interestingly, we have 60% of the population has not enough dietary magnesium intake. And apparently, in the last a century, our soil magnesium has decreased by 20%. But, you know, just kind of a digress, our electrolytes intake is completely upside down. There's a very good evidence showing that if you have adequate amount of a potassium intake, actually you preserve the vascular function better. You have more cardiovascular protection. Very good vascular tonicity and function. So this is a loaded question. I think the patient population in CKD and ESRD is very different from normal population. We can spend lots of time to talk about it, but that's a very, you know, thought-provoking question.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. How do you balance, you know, the high potassium on these patients versus the benefit of intake?
Yeah.
All right. Any other questions? Oh, there's one more question from the back. Thanks.
Thank you very much for a nice presentation, Wolfgang Winkelmeyer, Baylor College of Medicine. You made a recommendation to not give patiromer in the emergency setting. This is a recommendation with which I concur in general, but I personally don't think we have enough data to make a very firm recommendation here. If you look at some of the zirconium cyclosilicate trials, for example, the Packham trial that came out in NEJM 2015, they had very granular information on the time course of potassium lowering, and between the 10 grams and the placebo groups, they were able to show a significant difference in potassium concentrations as early as 2 hours, and actually at 4 hours, it was also significant and already quite meaningful in a delta of 0.3 milliequivalent. While at your institution, and hopefully at my institution, we have easy access to other acute interventions to treat hyperkalemia, not every healthcare setting is blessed with such easy access. So in certain settings, it may actually take a few hours until a nurse gets called in, for example, and the patient gets hooked up to a dialysis machine if that's what you need to do. And so I really feel that we need to get a little bit more information whether these drugs may actually be beneficial in the emergency setting in certain healthcare situations.
That's a very good, very, very good point. In general, I agree with you. Another concern I have to looking at the ACE inhibitor, so if the patient has demonstrated intolerant to ACE inhibitor with hyperkalemia, now you put a regimen which is a maintenance dose of patiromer. You have to make sure the patient's constantly adherent, you know, compliant. So what happens if they are not compliant? So they stop taking patiromer, and they will get into trouble.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, same thing. It's almost opposite of what your situation, you know, in the acute setting, you could certainly try patiromer with everything ready for the other treatments. On the other hand, even in the ambulatory setting, you need to give the patient who are really know what they are doing, and they have to take it. If they forget to take it, they will get into trouble. Yeah.
Thank you.
That's a very good point.
Yes.
My question is about hypomagnesemia. We see a lot of that. Everybody does labs every day, and there's magnesiums being 1 and 1.5. And the hospital continuously replaces max sulfate in patients who are outpatient more so than inpatient. You don't have the luxury of giving them IV mag on a regular basis. Magnesium oxide and malox and stuff cause diarrhea. They may have short gut syndrome anyway, and diarrhea becomes a major problem. What are your thoughts about when to treat magnesium, how to treat it? I have one guy who takes iron max sulfate at home twice a week. Do you bring them in? IV access becomes an issue. Thank you.
So I'm running an electrolyte clinic, and in the last decade, I've treated numerous patients who, because of the PPI, because of diabetes, and many reasons, develop a total body magnesium depletion. And so the local physician tend to start a portal cath, and they infuse the patient's infusion every day, up to 15% of infusion every other day. Very impressive. But what happened to the infusion? You never replete the intracellular magnesium. Actually, the patient usually end up so frustrated and coming to Mayo with magnesium of 0.8, continuous gets infusion. You know, infusion, and there's a surge, and then magnesium is dropped down to almost very symptomatic. The only way to restore magnesium concentration is through gut. There's no other way around. because you don't want to create a surge of high magnesium, then the kidney will open the floodgate and get rid of all the magnesium you give intravenously in a couple of hours. But remember, magnesium is a very special cation. It's very different from potassium or calcium. What happened is it has a hydration shell. Outside of magnesium, it was a radius about 400 times. So it's hiding in the hydration shell. So even with we have TRPM6, 6 and 7 as a channel to help the magnesium goes from the blood circulation into the cell. But if you're looking at a crystallo structure of TRPM7 or the magnesium transport, it's very elaborate, like a rose petal kind of a huge structure. Why we need a, such a huge structure when magnesium is so small? Because the magnesium had to hook up to the receptor and you have to go through the dehydration process and eventually you get into the cell. So the point is, you need to raise magnesium in the blood. Then you wait, because magnesium had to take time to go from the circulation, gradually going into the cell to restore the cellular function. So magnesium in the cell, where is the major function? It's a coenzyme of more than 600 enzymes and related to mitochondrial function. It's a, you know, just so critical. But the only, so in the past, I have solved the problems 100%. Even with a patient who has a short gut syndrome, you could always use combination magnesium, for instance, syrup plus the tablets. Don't use slow mag. Slow mag has very low elemental magnesium. And then you have them in divided dosage. Some patients in the beginning was so severe, and I have them take a syrup every 1 to 2 hours in the first few days, and just to get them off the infusion. And then with the gradual, usually takes the, they visit Mayo for about a week. At the end of the week, we are able to come off IV. But that doesn't mean we have solved the problem. Remember, it's again, it's a very slow process. You need to keep the blood magnesium level at normal range for weeks, sometimes even months, in order for the patient to feel a difference. I have patients being on from magnesium depletion to normal magnesium over about 6 months and coming back to me. And the last visit to me was, she's like almost 80 years old, and she said, "Doctor, last week was the first week I went to my needle room to, you know, start the needle that she has not had energy to do it." So again, it's a very slow process. You need to use the gut to try to, in a divided dosage. You cannot do in one stroke, and it takes time. So magnesium is a tough abnormality to fix.